Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Lynn Testa, and this is our show for the week of Schmurz Day, December 21st, 2020. Happy Festivus and Merry Christmas. On the show today, news and Disney patents. And in our main segment, Jim talks about the history of the Country Bear Jamboree Christmas show. And I would like to dedicate this episode to my good friend, Guy Selga. Let's get started by bringing in the man who says, the moral of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is that any deviation from the norm will be punished unless it's exploitable. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Oh, Len.
A little harsh for the holidays, was it?
It touched too much reality, but one of my great disappointments last year, we were down at Walt Disney World in November, and we made a special trip over to SeaWorld because I wanted to get my picture taken. They have a walk-around version of Yukon Cornelius, but it turns out they weren't starting their Christmas celebration. I think I was there on Wednesday, and they weren't starting it till Friday, and it just sort of crushed me.
That's the one with the heat miser, right?
No. That's Santa Claus is coming to town, and again, you're getting your Rankin Basses a little scrambled here.
Wait, which one? That was the one with was it the stop-motion Rudolph one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The problem is that if we get started with talking about Rankin Bass holiday specials, there are a great number of really terrible ones. Oh. The Nestor, the long-eared donkey. We won't even go down that road, Len. It's just sort of...
We should do a sideshow on next year on the Rankin Bass Christmas episodes. I know it's not Disney related, but it would be hysterical.
Lots of childhood scarring there. Just the little drummer boy alone put, you know, numbers of kids in therapy.
Speaking of the little drummer boy, do you know what the little drummer boy challenge is?
No.
It starts on as soon as Thanksgiving is over. Mm-hmm. And it's who can go the longest without hearing the little drummer boy song. And if you make it to Christmas, you win.
Wow. Who actually enters the Air Force bunker?
Well, I mean, this year, it's easier to do, right? I was in the studios over the weekend and heard some jazz version of it, and I was out. But Laurel and I play every year, and there have been a couple of times where we won. There have been a couple of times where we lose it, both exactly the same time. Typically, it's somewhere in Disney World where we're like, is this a Mannheim Steamroller version of, darn it, we're out.
There are times when I've listened for 5 minutes to a Mannheim Steamroller version of A Christmas Carol and have no clue. Wait a minute, Sugar Plum Fairy Dancing.
Yeah, what is this? Is this the Nutcracker or is it Santa Claus Coming to Town? What is this?
I know there's a melody in there somewhere, but I'll wait.
That's exactly it. Like, where in all of these bells is the melody?
Yes. There we go.
All right, Jim, let's do a quick shout out to subscribers over at DisneyDish.bandcamp.com. Thanks to new subscribers GSing1001, Bill H., and Bay Area Dawn, and longtime subscribers Todd A., DizDoc, and Ian Sr. Jim, these folks are the dangerous fugitives whose wanted posters are displayed in the queue at Star Tours. The adventures continue over at Disney's Hollywood Studios. They claim it's all a misunderstanding involving a bulky R2 unit and some blue milk. We all know that's not true. True story.
I learned so much in this part of the show.
So I was at the studios, and I was over the weekend, and I was testing touring plans with at the studios with my sister Christina, and we're going through the queue for Star Tours, and that's where I saw there are actually wanted posters displayed in the queue at Star Tours, and I was trying to figure out what kind of an airport has wanted posters in it. Like if I go to JFK. Or going to Newark. Okay, Newark's a bad example.
Well, right?
any normal airport in the United States. Yeah. Do they have pictures of fugitives like next to the Starbucks?
To be honest, given the prices that are charged at Starbucks, I think a few people who work in management should have wanted posters.
You laugh. My flight to Florida when I came was $33 on JetBlue, which is less than the cost of a breakfast. in the airport. Like you buy this bagel and this coffee. Yeah. And maybe a water for later. We will throw in the flight to Florida for you for free. Yeah, $33.
Yeah.
I could have gotten it for $19 had I gotten up earlier, but I was like, yeah.
I do not understand what happens to a bottle of water as it enters the terminal. That suddenly, this is $6. Interesting. $2 out there, $6 here. How did that happen?
All right, Jim, let's do the news. Jim, a bunch of stuff is returning to Walt Disney World, starting with the Electrical Water Pageant, which returned to service yesterday, December 20th.
Did I ever tell you about the night I got to ride in one of the flat aluminum things that they pulled the water pageant out onto Seven Seas Lagoon and Bay Lake?
Is this the one where the court transcript has been unsealed and we can all read about it now? Or is this like an actual official thing?
Somewhere in that gray area.
Official. No one said no. So I'm going with it was approved. Yeah.
It was something I was not supposed to be doing and was made possible through a friend. It was technically ballast.
That's right.
Which, by the way.
We're inviting Jim on. We need this part of the boat to stay down.
That's right. Which, by the way, is quite serious. When you get that thing out on the water, and I know they are pieces of chain link with basically Christmas lights on them, but they do catch the wind.
And that's right. Yeah, they're still giant sails, right?
Yeah, and the way they have to move those boats and the engines actually pulling in two different directions to keep them stable. If you're looking for a thrill ride, forget about Space Mountain. Find a way to get on the water pageant and where you will legitimately take your life in your hands so a giant whale can pretend to sprout.
I never thought of that, but yeah, those things are just giant billboards, and I'm sure the wind has got to catch them.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
In hindsight, not one of my smartest moves. And again, very, very happy to make it back up that little canal and climb up behind the Magic Kingdom. So.
This is one of the things that should be a Disney Plus special, like Forky Presents the Electrical Water Pageant, how it's made.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not getting the Lizzie McGuire reboot, so we might as well have something.
Okay. I was wondering about that.
I'm bitter.
I get that. The interesting thing, though, is there were supposedly two episodes shot.
I'm just saying, if you were in New York and you have the dailies from those episodes, you know where to reach me.
There you go.
Other things that are opening, Jim, the Coronado Springs El Mercado de Coronado food court reopened this weekend, too, which is good news for the folks staying there. I still think of this as Pepper Market.
Yeah, so they rebranded it after they opened the new tower, or?
I think so, yeah. I don't know that people got, maybe they thought Pepper Market was going to be too spicy. You never know. I mean, it's a convention crowd. You never know.
There you go.
By the way, so the fact that I still call it Pepper Market reminds me of the shirt I saw over the weekend at the studios. I was walking down ABC Commissary, which is doing these, like, imagine a soap opera theme from the 1970s. You know how it is, right? Right. So that sort of like funky, jazzy thing. Yep. Imagine that, but it's Christmas songs, where it's like, if I took the guy who wrote the theme song to Soap or the Love Boat, and I had him interpret "O Silent Night." That's what it was, and it was like I would listen to this all day, every day. It was anyway. This guy was walking towards me. His shirt said, "Whatever, I'm still calling it MGM." I was like, "Where did you get this shirt? Because I want one."
There you go, man after my own heart. Oh, that's great.
I mean, just the right shirt for the right time. So
there
it was great.
Yep.
Anyway, a couple of other things are reopening. The reopening date for All-Star Movies is being pushed back a month and a couple of weeks. It was February 9th. It is now March 22nd, 2021. Not sure if they're going to use that extra time to work on room refurbishments, which they'd started. Also, the Beach Club got a reopening date, May 30th, 2021. Wilderness Lodge, finally, reopening for summer, so June 6th.
Oh, hey.
No date yet for the Polynesian Village Resort, which is still summer. And then no date yet for All-Star Sports, All-Star Music, you know, Kingdom Lodge, Boardwalk, or Port Orleans French Quarter, Port Orleans Riverside. So, but still, it's progress is being made. And then, Jim, did you see this Disney patent for this thing simply called Interactive Toy?
This got by me. What are we...
So it's supposedly for an interactive toy that you would bring on a ride. And if you look at the ride vehicle for that, Jim, which I've put in the show notes, what ride vehicle does that look like to you?
Ooh, we got a plane-y kind of thing going in here.
It's a plane, right. So the Imagineers that are listed as the inventors are Scott Trowbridge, Asa Kalama, Peter Stepniewicz, Casey Ging, and John Hampton. So I think it's Disneyland. Because Scott is over Disneyland now, right?
Yeah, I want to say that after he rode herd on Galaxy's Edge,
right? Yeah,
that he returned to the mothership, so to speak.
So the idea here is that you could bring a toy on a ride, interact with the toy, and have it change something in the ride. Now, Disney's done stuff like this before. Remember the old World Showcase adventure games, right, mm-hmm. where you would play with a simulated phone and, mm-hmm. You know, in Japan, it would cause, you know, fire mm-hmm. or flags or something to happen. And, you know, the Mexico Pavilion, you know, you'd see parrots move and whatnot. Mm-hmm. This seems like something similar to that, but on a ride.
Yeah. Hmm.
Now, I don't think it's a thrill ride because you wouldn't want people bringing toys mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. onto thrill rides and then, you know, trying to play with them and, you know, the toys would go everywhere. So I'm thinking this is going to be a kid's ride.
The problem is, face it, for a patent, sometimes you deliberately obscure whatever character tile you're going into it.
Yeah, Disney lately has been using just plain rectangular boxes mm-hmm. to illustrate things. They've stopped putting, you know, actual drawings of things in the patent. But this ride vehicle was different enough. Yeah, it looks like an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the canopy. You can actually see the little gun turrets. Example 210 and 202.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, anyway, interactive toy, like the next version of Pal Mickey, again.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who actually wanted to shoot their Pal Mickey.
That's true.
This could actually work out.
We'll see what this is, though. My guess is it's a Disneyland ride. We just don't know which one yet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something from Marvel?
See, now the problem is we've got that Marvel E-Ticket Plus, the Battle of Wakanda thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, geez, that is the last time I talked with anybody about that. That was 5 years off. That's one of those $900 million capital expenditure projects that's being held. But let me make a few phone calls. Let me send a few emails and see if we can get somebody to talk about this.
All right, that'd be great.
Okay.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jim tells us about the history of the Country Bear Jamboree Christmas Show. We'll be right back.
May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right, Jim, I am getting ready to head up north for the holiday where there's a foot plus of snow. And let's face it, we are all already indoors anyway. So lots of television in my future. I'm assuming that Deutschland 89 isn't considered a Christmas story. So, Jim, what's worth watching?
It's odd that you mention a Christmas story. Holiday favorite, MGM UA released it back into theaters back in November of 1983. Bob Clark film was based on the semi-fictional stories that Gene Shepard told in his 1966 book, In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. Did not do all that well during its initial theatrical release. In fact, by the time actual Christmas rolled around in 1983, this MGM UA thing had largely fallen out of theaters.
Okay.
But there was someone at Disney that really loved A Christmas Story. And how do I know this? I have in my hand here my copy of the December 29th, 1983 issue of Disneyland Line. And the cover story reads as follows. Strains of O Come All Ye Faithful filled a darkened Main Street on the evenings of December 17th and the 18th as Disneyland's 28th Christmas season began with a stirring candlelight procession. 1,000 carolers wound their way down Main Street singing a joyous celebration of the season to gather at the train station where the story of the first Christmas was told in words and music with actor Darren McGavin narrating the story both evenings accompanied by a mass choir.
Darren McGavin, wasn't he the Night Stalker?
There we go! All right!
I love that show, by the way, growing up.
No, Kolchak.
Not the person I would have picked.
Darren McGavin had a varied career. And yes, Kolchak the Night Stalker was one of the, you know, one of those things.
Loved that show.
Loved it too. Really did. Same thing here. But he also worked for Disney. He did No Deposit, No Return in 1975 for Disney. He also did Hot Lead and Cold Feet. There's also a two-part episode of The Wonderful World of Disney he did in 72 called High Flying Spy that I hope somebody at Disney Plus is listening. And it's like, look, dig that out of the vault. It riffs on the history of Thaddeus Lowe, that the guy who did the balloon observation during the Civil War became the first sort of aeronaut and reported down to the people in the field about the battle. But anyway, it had been more than 5 years at this point since Darren McGavin had last worked for Walt Disney Productions in 1978. Yet here he is, December of 83, standing in front of all 85 members of the Walt Disney employee choir and does telling the story of the first Christmas. And the way I've heard the story, Len, is that it was Ron Miller, Walt's son-in-law, who'd just become Disney CEO in 83, who had seen A Christmas Story during its original run to theaters and said, dang, Disney should have made that movie. 3 months later, Disney actually launches its Touchstone Picture division, though when it launched in February of 84, it was known as Touchstone Films. Ron largely launched the Touchstone division because he longed for the days when Disney could actually make a movie where a kid could say something other than fudge.
All right.
There's this famous interview that Ron did in 1982. E.T. has just been released, and it's made $600 million worldwide. And Ron flat out says, like, if it weren't for the line in that movie where Elliot turns to his brother and says, it was nothing like that penis breath, that Spielberg movie could have made for Disney. And in fact, to be honest, Len, there's a number of folks at Disney who have told me that after Columbia Pictures actually passed on making E.T. in 1981, Spielberg took it to Disney.
Really?
Yep. He's obviously a longtime Disney fan. I mean, you think about how When You Wish Upon a Star shows up in Close Encounters, or for that matter, there's that wonderful scene in 1941 where the general, as Hollywood, you know, there's riots on Hollywood Boulevard, but he's in a movie theater watching Dumbo and crying. Spielberg loved Disney. I don't know if you remember the stories about how in 1941 went out of control.
The movie?
Yeah, it went.
That was the Belushi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie was a mess.
It was. It has a great dance number in the middle of it, and it has an amazing cast, but yeah, it is a mess. By the way, it's another Christmas movie the way Die Hard is a Christmas movie. So anyway, because 1941's went over budget, and there were all these stories about drug use and that sort of thing, Disney turns it down, which is why E.T. eventually is made by Universal. Getting back to Darren McGavin now. It's supposedly Ron Miller himself who extends the invitation to Darren McGavin to come narrate Disneyland's Candlelight Procession in November of 1983, with Miller thinking that you did such a nice job with A Christmas Story, I think you'll be the perfect fit to narrate the first Christmas Story at Disneyland's holiday celebration. Ron Miller wasn't the only person at Disney Productions who loved A Christmas Story, fall of 1993. I was lucky enough to get a behind-the-scenes tour of the then still being finaled Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. This was early fall because the attraction didn't actually open to the public till November of that same year. I want to say it was Arlen Miller who got the tour set up for myself and Michelle Valladolid, but it was Paul Osterhout. He was the show producer on Carousel of Progress and the overall creative lead for Tomorrowland 94. He's the one who takes us behind the construction fence, and we eventually, inside the carousel building, walk up on stage, and we are now standing in Jimmy's bedroom. He's the animatronic boy now who's dressed as the werewolf and carving the pumpkin.
Which scene is this?
This is the 1940s scene.
So that's
left side
Halloween's.
Of the stage? Yep, Halloween.
Okay, left side of the stage. Okay.
Okay.
All right, go ahead. Okay.
All right, and there on Jimmy's bed, still wrapped in bubble wrap because it has only just arrived in the mail that day, Paul picks it up like it's a piece of the True Cross because it's an official Red Ryder carbon action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing that tells time. I hefted it, but
I was just saying, did you pick it up?
I didn't dare open it because, again, it's sealed in the bubble wrap. But as far as I know, that Red Ryder rifle is still on Jimmy's bed in the 1940 scene on Carousel of Progress. So
that is fantastic. I will look for it the next time I go.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we were supposed to talk about
Country Bears.
Country Bears. Okay. Darren McGavin is narrating the first Christmas Story at Disneyland in December of 83. And it's about this exact same time that the managers of Disneyland have turned to Imagineering, and you got to help us. Because only 5% of the guests are going all the way back to Bear Country and experiencing that corner of the park. It's gotten so lopsided. If we're talking about the Country Bear in Florida, That one has lingered for as long as it has because it's on the main drag in Frontierland. If you're going from, say, the Haunted Mansion to Pirates and the Haunted Mansion to Splash Mountain or Big Sunday, you have to walk by this thing. So it captures a good portion of, you know, the guests in the park every day. Whereas Country Bear at Disneyland, they built it in the northwesternmost portion of the park. They actually spent $8 million to build it, moved 250 trees to create the illusion of the Pacific Northwest. And it did decent business. I mean, it opens in March of 72. It eventually falls through the floor because there's only one attraction back there. Once you've seen Country Bear, you've seen Country Bear. You know, just sort of like, yeah, that was cute. Less than 4 years and change since it's open. And it's like, all right, what can we do to get more people to go back there? And it's like, well, we could move the keelboats dock back there, but it's like, eh, that's not enough. And so by January of 1982, they actually have a committee at Disneyland that is creating a master plan for the next 10 years. And they flat out say that they're talking about broadening or changing the overall theme of this land because Bear Country remains a weak draw due to its limited theme and potential attractions based around it. A broader theme would balance this area more with Adventureland, Fantasyland, and the like. And so they're actually now begin to have conversations about shifting Bear Country's storyline to make this part of the park a celebration of the Deep South. Dixie.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong with that?
Kentucky Hall, Mark Twain. Oh. And those of you who've been listening to the recent shows about the Dixie Landings retheme and all that, oof. This is 19 years previous to that decision. To the Imagineers' way of thinking, okay, Bear Country abuts a Haunted Mansion, which in turn is at the outermost edge of, you know, New Orleans Square. So turning the Bear Country into a nostalgic recreation of the rural South, well, that would then make this land a logical outgrowth of the city and plantations, New Orleans Square, and the Haunted Mansion. And by the way, Len, this is the exact same thinking that is powering now the redo of Splash Mountain into a Princess Tiana ride.
That would make sense in Disneyland. It totally makes sense.
Yep, yep.
Right? From a geographic perspective, from a time perspective, it's still like at least 20 years beyond. So what it says, 1910? 1920?
I think it's more 1920s because I want to say Tiana's friend is kind of a flapper.
So the American West frontier was definitively closed by like 1890. So this is 30 years after Disneyland. You get the geography thing that's going to work for you. All right. There's another show. Okay, go ahead.
For a time, Disney develops this idea. And we get a rudimentary version of the Song of the South Flume ride. There's also talk of taking one of the two theaters that's in the Country Bear Playhouse. And they had built the Mark Twain figure for American Adventure at Epcot. And the whole notion was, well, what if, say, we reach out to Hal Holbrook, who does his one-man show, Mark Twain Tonight, and we do a thumbnail version. And, you know, we have him come in, voice Mark Twain. And
that wouldn't be bad. That would be is he still alive, by the way?
He just, in the past year or so. And the weird thing is, you got to remember, he started doing Mark Twain Tonight as, you know, he was, you know, a starving actor, and he would do it at schools. You know, he would go in, dress up
as Mark Twain was probably still alive when Hal was still doing it. Well, Mark Twain caught a few acts.
Well, that was the funniest part of the story, that over time, I mean, in fact, I remember when CBS did their television special version of it, there's footage of him in his dressing room and spraying his hair to make it white like Mark Twain. And by the time he finished doing it, he really didn't need to do much makeup. It was like, walk outside, I'm the old man with white hair. But they were going to do that. They were going to take the Hungry Bear and change it into Aunt Polly's, similar from Tom Sawyer's Island or Walt Disney World. And then they were actually going to move the Tom Sawyer rafts in much the same way we were talking about moving the keelboats up there. And, you know, they continue to futz with the idea. There's another meeting of the committee in February of 82. And at this point, they're talking about, well, what if we took the bottom floor of Hungry Bear and say, again, we're looking for ways to drive people deep into the park. What if we created a dinner entertainment venue like Pioneer Hall at Fort Wilderness at Walt Disney World? They were also talking about, in fact, what's so funny is they were talking about building this in the land where Anaheim's version of Galaxy's Edge is now located. But they were going to do a Fox and the Hound ride-through event where, you know, you would board cars similar to the Model T that Amos Slade drove in that animated feature, and then roll around in an indoor-outdoor environment from an 81 Disney production. And there was even some talk of, well, you know, if we're going to make this sort of tie to the world and the lore of Mark Twain, it's like they were actually talking about creating a show scene across the way on Tom Sawyer's Island that could be seen from the Mark Twain and the Columbia and the rafts, where you had, you know, Mark and Huck as AA figures.
Are all of the Samuel Clemens stories in the public domain now? Yeah, they've all got to be.
Oh,
right?
They got to be.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah. But anyway, here's the problem. It's going to take 6 months at least to develop all this material. It's going to take another 15 months after that to create all of the necessary show elements and then complete the onset side construction phase. Preliminary budget, you know, as they were going to sort of working this out, it's like, wow, that's $30 million. And meanwhile, attendance continues to erode in Bear Country. And it's like, we need a fix now. You guys need to do something now. And so this is where Dave Fighton and Michael Sprout enter. They're two young Imagineers, you know, looking to prove themselves. And there's this great story in the winter 1985 issue of Disney News Magazine, where Michael Sprout is talking to Betsy Richmond, says, look, Dave and I both really like Country Bear. And we were talking about it one day. We decided these poor bears must be tired of singing the same songs over and over again. So we tried our hand at developing a new show that would take the bears and put them in an entirely different context. And Fighton went on to explain we treated the bears like a repertory company and wrote a new play for them. And so it's just, and the notion was, okay, all right, you know, what do we need for costumes? What do we need for scenery? Songs, dialogue. And they bring the sketches to then WDI creative chief Marty Sklar. He looks at them, and he knows the people at Disneyland are just sort of like, you got to help us, you got to help us. And it's like, all right, guys, it's late 1983. I need this for next Christmas. Can you do it? Because they had the second theater, they were actually able to keep Country Bear open, but to be programming the new show in the second theater.
So in like June of 1984, when they're prepping the show, you could walk in and hear next door.
That's right.
Parts of the Christmas show. Oh, that's funny.
Country Bear Christmas Special opens November 23rd, 1984 at Disneyland, as well as at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. In fact, they were able to bang. It's out everywhere. Immediately becomes a hit with theme park visitors. So much so that Marty Sklar orders Fighton and Sprout to write a second, more long-lived show. So that's when they come up with Country Bear Vacation Hoedown, which debuts in February of 86. They also dummied out concepts for two other shows, a Halloween Country Bear show and a St. Valentine's Day show.
I've seen the concept art for these.
Have you really?
Yes.
Anything particularly leap out or?
I mean, the Halloween, they're in costumes, and St. Valentine's Day, there's a lot of, you know, bears dressed up as Cupid thing. Pretty standard stuff, but
okay.
The Halloween thing would have been interesting had they done it. I don't know if they would have had much of a time to turn around for Christmas then.
Yeah, they did need at least 3 weeks. And each time they changed the show, whether they went from Christmas to the standard Country Bear or the standard Country Bear to Christmas, it cost $50,000. But here's the problem, that while the Walt Disney World version, you know, continued to do steady business, just after a year or two, the folks out in Anaheim lost their enthusiasm for this seasonal show. And Disney, all sorts of things to try and prop it up to keep it going. In fact, there was one year, I want to say it was 86, 87, where the only way, if you wanted to get your picture taken with Santa at Disneyland, you had to hike all the way back to Bear Country.
Oof.
So these exhausted, sweaty children, you know, I got to see these photos of these kids drooping in Santa's lap because it's like, I walked all the way back here and don't make me go to Country Bear. So they were looking for a more permanent solution, particularly in California. So this is where Splash Mountain and Critter Country came in. But anyway, that brings us to the end of the Country Bear special story. If you're like me and you miss this seasonal show, well, you know, there's always Tokyo Disneyland.
It's still there, really?
Yeah.
It's in Tokyo?
But sweet. There, it's called the Jingle Bell Jamboree, and it's been presented there seasonally since 1988. But I want to say it was Stingray on Twitter the other day that put up some photographs of Teddy Bear in her Christmas special outfit, And the attention to detail is crazy.
If
you go close on her cast, it's actually been signed by Bunny, Bubbles, and Beulah. And she still has her ski passes hanging off of her jacket. So,
oh, that's classic.
Yeah. But anyway, there you go.
That is fantastic. I didn't know about that. Is the show on YouTube?
Yeah, I mean, that's the joy of YouTube, is all this stuff lives on. In fact, I don't know if you pay attention to what Sam Carter is up to, but he has been loading up all of the old Disneyland Christmas parades. Just the other night, they were running the ad for the new Christmas special that they're going to be doing on Christmas Day from Walt Disney World. And it's Titus Burgess, who played Sebastian on Broadway, and he's one of the hosts of the things. And it's like, I genuinely feel bad for the guy. And it's like, well, here I am socially distancing and pointing to something that will be filmed later, I hope.
Yeah, it's going to be a strange year for the parade. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for the Disney Dish show today. Please head on over to disneydish.bandcamp.com. where you'll find exclusive shows never before heard on iTunes, including new in-park audio and a special series on Epcot storytelling. You can find more of Jim at jimhalemedia.com and more of me, Len, at touringplans.com. We're produced fabulously by Aaron Adams, who will be leading casting and bourbon tasting classes, not at the same time, at the 2021 Virginia Fly Fishing and Wine Festival, Saturday, January 23rd, at the Meadow Event Center in beautiful downtown Doswell, Virginia. While Aaron's doing that, please go onto iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We'll see you on the next show.